朝日新聞ポッドキャスト。
Hello everyone, I'm Noriko Akiyama of Asahi Shimbun. Welcome to our podcast program. So this is English version, so please enjoy our Japanese version also. So today's guest is...
Yeah, my name is Jim Ramo. I'm a professor of sociology and demography at Princeton University.
So welcome to Jim-san, so to our podcast program.
Thank you.
So Jim-san is also a good listener of Asapoki, this program.
Yes.
Thank you so much. So we talk about this later. So as a researcher of sociology, what do you measure?
So within the broader field of sociology, my area of specialization is demography, particularly what we might call social demography. And that is a discipline or subdiscipline that focuses on trying to understand the social, economic, and policy influences on population size and population structure.
So in Japan, demography means, so of course, declining birth rate.
Indeed.
Yeah.
That's exactly correct, yes.
Yeah, it's a really, really serious problem.
Declining birth rate, population aging, of course, as we can discuss later, those are two sides of the same coin. But I'm biased as a demographer.
Yeah.
But I would argue that this is probably the most critical domestic issue that Japan
yes.
and several other East Asian countries are facing right now and in the future.
Yes. So, first of all, I want to ask, so why you are interested in Japan or like that? So, where were you born and raised in the U.S.?
So, I'm from the Midwest in the United States and have spent most of my life there. I was born and lived much of my early life in Indiana, small college town in northern Indiana. In middle school, I moved to Michigan, right above Indiana. I came back to Michigan for graduate school and then spent 20 years in the next state, Wisconsin. So I've lived most of my life there.
So before you came to Japan, you lived in...
Before I came to Japan, I came to Japan immediately after graduating from college. And the college I went to was in rural New York State. So that was probably my... pre-Japan
yeah.
location.
Mm. So why first you became interested in Japan?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
People ask me this a lot, and I would love to give a great answer, like I was always interested in Japan, Japanese history or literature or art,
yeah.
and I came to learn about that after I finished my undergraduate schooling, but that's actually not true. I came to Japan without any real knowledge or interest necessarily in the country. That's bad to say, but it's true. But I came, as I said, right after graduating from college, and I really wanted to make money to travel the world. That was my goal as a 22-year-old, and that was in the 1980s, and Japan was a very good place for...
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Bubble.
The bubble, indeed.
Yeah, bubble economy.
Yes.
Yes.
It was a wonderful time, and it was a good place for a young man with no skills to make money. But to your question, very soon after arriving, I realized that I loved this country, and I spent 4 years here, came back. I've spent about 11 years of my life living here. So I developed my interest after arriving, yeah.
So first 4 years, so you worked in Japan as an English teacher?
As an English teacher. Yeah. I actually had a really great opportunity to be kind of an English teacher, but in a Japanese company. It doesn't exist anymore, Sanyo Denki. But I worked there for 2 years and was able to sort of learn about what it's like to work in a Japanese company.
So, yeah, I want to talk about the bubble era because I belong to the bubble generation. So, and at that time, I was the university student.
Mm-hmm.
So, the bubble, really, I feel nostalgia because that was the time the really economy is good, the situation, the society is a kind of full of energy.
Agree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So please share some specific memory of that time, bubble era.
Bubble era. So yeah. I, like you, am a child of the bubble era. I think I must be a few years older than you because I was just finishing my undergraduate time, as I said. And as I said, I didn't know much about Japan when I came here. But soon after arriving, you know, exactly as you said, the energy was inescapable.
Yes.
It was like you could breathe the air and smell energy and hope for the future.
Yeah. Yes, hope of the future. That is definitely
yes.
Yeah, difference. Yeah.
I think that's a big difference. Yes. And as you very well know, young people were flying off to Hong Kong or Singapore on the weekend. All of those reasons made it a wonderful time to be here. Of course, it was a great time to be young here and not have, you know, responsibility of work and family. So I had a wonderful time then. Yeah.
Yeah. So every night I went to nomikai, so bar hopping and disco or something like that. So I was the college student, but I took taxi. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I remember this too. So my life at that time was very similar to yours, not so much on the disco, but the nomikai for sure.
Yes, yes.
And one of the things that I really remember is the taxi lines.
And yes.
It was, depending on the time of the evening, almost impossible to get a taxi because everybody had the taxi cam from their companies.
Yes, yes.
And nobody took the train. A, because it was already past the last train, but B, because they had these free rides.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah, I remember. So maybe I was 20 years old or 21 years old. So at the midnight of December, Nishiazabu Kousaten, it was really so lots of the bar and the restaurant place. And I waited the taxi for 2 hours. Yeah.
I've done the same thing. Yeah. I've done exactly the same thing. I don't know that I want to do that now, but that was a bad experience at the time, but a wonderful memory to think about how Japan was at that time. You know, now we can talk a little demography and taxis. We have problems even finding enough drivers for taxis. So things have really changed. It was a different time.
Yeah. So we had a lot of hope of for future.
Right.
So we thought the future must be bright.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think at the time, you know, tell me if you feel differently, but my impression was that most people in Japan at the time, you know, of course there was the high-speed economic growth in the 60s and 70s, but I think this was really different. And I think most people I knew assumed that this was going to continue forever.
Yes, yes.
Japan
forever.
Had emerged as number one.
Yeah, Japan is number one.
Indeed. Indeed. But it didn't last. So, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
But there are many, you know, wonderful things about Japan right now. Sure, there are a lot of issues that Japan is facing, but a lot of other countries are facing the same issues, particularly with respect to demographic concerns. And I would argue that Japan is doing no worse than other countries. Mm. And there's a lot that other countries can learn from Japan about how they're responding to these challenges. So I'm not a pessimist. I'm an optimist. Yeah.
So after 4 years, once you came back to U.S., but why you come back to Japan again?
So that's a great question. Yeah. I thought that I would be able to, you know, utilize my experience here in Japan for 4 years. I had learned some Japanese. I thought that would be helpful in finding a job, but it really wasn't. There's a lot of people, particularly on the West Coast where I was, who are completely fluent and have spent many years working in Japan or for Japanese companies. So I didn't really have a good plan for the future. But coincidentally, I was shown an article in the local Japanese newspaper, the Hokubei Hochi, it was called, in Seattle.
Yeah.
And it was about the Monbusho Fellowship Program and announcing a test. So I took the test, passed the test, and received a fellowship to come to Japan.
Oh, you got a scholarship.
A scholarship, exactly. Yes, yeah. To come to Japan to do graduate studies. So I came right back after 1 year.
So for a master's degree?
For a master's degree, that's correct, yeah.
So why you chose the demographics for your major or?
No. So this was a really interesting thing. And we don't have time to talk in detail about my life and probably no one wants to listen to that anyways. But it's been a series of just lucky events. My life has been lucky. And one of the lucky things, which I was a little upset about at the time, is that the Monbusho Scholarship required that I do graduate studies in Japan in my field of major, which was economics. So I went to a university in Japan to do a master's degree in economics, and I realized a couple of things about the discipline. One, I didn't really like it all that much as a discipline. And two, more importantly, I was very clear that I wasn't going to be a very good economist. But the lucky part is that I discovered what we call population economics, which is the economics version of demography. And through that, became very familiar with the demographic research world and realized this is for me.
Oh, so this is for you means, so this is the combination of economics and demography. But I imagine at that time, so the declining birth rate is not so issue in Japan yet.
The declining birth rate, I would argue, was an issue at that time. But that's, and this is, again, this is the early 1990s. That's because now we have hindsight. We can look back and see. But I think if you go back to that time and you read what demographers were writing, it was very clear that this was going to become an issue if things didn't change. The fertility rate in Japan, we can talk more later if you want, it fell below what we call replacement level in the 1970s. And so that's already 15, 20 years that it had been below replacement. So it was pretty clear that this was going to become a problem. And I don't think as a young scholar, I understood that well. But as a person living in Japan, I could kind of feel it. My university was in a relatively, not a very vibrant part of Osaka. I saw lots of old people. I never saw babies. I never saw pregnant women already. And there were little occasions, like I would go to buy a ticket before we do everything on our smartphones. And there were magnifying glasses in the JR station for older people.
Oh, already?
Yes.
Oh, 25
yes.
years ago.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So these kinds of little experiences convinced me that this is going to become an issue. And it really did, obviously, become critically important.
So that means this these 20 years or 30 years is also lost decades.
Indeed, indeed, yeah. So we've spent a lot of our time, a lot of the energy doing research, trying to understand the ways in which social and economic changes during the so-called lost decade, then the lost 20 years, then the lost 30 years, have influenced fertility rates, marriage rates, and things like that. And I won't go into great detail because you have other things we want to talk about. But one of the things that I think is really critical in terms of what happened in that period is the emergence of non-standard employment and the concentration of large proportions of young men and women in what we might call kind of dead-end, non-standard employment with real implications for the ability or desire to start families. So there are many other things that happened at the time, but I think that's really critical.
Yes. So when it comes to this issue, so the declining birth rate and the aging society, I feel myself guilty because, as I said, I belong to the bubble generation and I'm a working woman and I'm still single. It's my choice, but I don't have any children. So sometimes I feel I'm guilty. So I want to ask, I know it's really huge, too huge question, but so there are lots of reasons so behind the declining birth rate and aging society of Japan. But so according to your research, what you analyze the main reason of this really serious problem, so declining birth rate.
Yeah. Before I answer that, I will say, Akiyama-san, you are not alone. There are many, many, many childless people who may or may not not feel guilty about those choices. But that, of course, contributes to low fertility, yes. So this is a wonderful question, and it's one that I and many of my colleagues have spent our whole careers working on. And there's a really easy answer and a really difficult answer. So the easy answer, let me tell you what it's not. Because I think a lot of people think, low fertility, that means that couples are having fewer children on average. That is fundamentally wrong. The number of children that married couples have in Japan, what demographers call completed fertility, has stayed the same for 30, 40 years. Mm-hmm. It's about two.
Yeah.
It's gone down a little bit in recent years, but that's not the reason. The primary reason for low fertility in Japan is later and less marriage.
Yeah. I think so. I totally agree.
That's the easy answer.
Yes.
As you know, and as I think all of the listeners know, unlike many European countries or the United States for that matter, children are not born outside of marriage. So as more and more people delay marriage or choose not to marry, that almost directly translates into lower numbers of births. So then the question becomes, how do you understand what's the explanation for this trend toward later and less marriage in Japan? And here, there are many, many explanations that have been given, increasing educational attainment, particularly for women, increasing labor force participation for women. You already mentioned this. Changing attitudes, you've already mentioned this. I've already mentioned the emerging economic uncertainty at younger ages. There are many, many explanations. But I think, just to be really brief, I hope, and simple, I think it's really useful to think about different groups of people. Obviously, it's obvious, but it's helpful to note that not all young Japanese people are the same, and the explanations are not the same for everybody. That's obvious, but it's important to keep in mind because there are many people like you who have chosen, as you said, to pursue a career, and that's one group. And another group is, I think, much more important from a policy perspective, and those are the people who want to marry, but for whatever reason feel they can't marry. They're not economically prepared. They don't have housing that's suitable for forming a family. They're not able to meet partners that they want to partner with. That's a really important group. And then just I'll keep talking just one more minute.
Yes.
The other group that I think is really important to keep in mind is what we call drifting into singlehood. Maybe I'd like to marry someday. That would be kind of nice. I kind of like to have kids, but I'm not ready yet. I want to pursue my career. Yeah. I want to pursue this hobby.
Yes.
I want to do this. I've got a partner, but I think there might be a better one out there. I'm going to wait. And then suddenly you're 40, 45 years old, and you're not married. So I think those are three really important groups to keep in mind.
Yes, I think so.
ねえねえ、朝ポキって今聞いてるやつ以外に別の番組あるって知ってた？
何それ、知らないんだけど。
メディアトークっていう番組、月曜日の IOK 会とかメンツ用な3人がパワーワード炸裂しててさ、イライラする相手に出会ったら人生1回目と思えばいいとか、魔女の宅急便の好きな
IOK？ メンツ用？何それ、教えて。
メディアトークでは伊藤大地、奥山翔二郎、神田大輔の IOK 会など魅力的なシリーズが盛りだくさん。コンセプトはあなたとメディアの未来をつなぐ。メディアトークで検索。
But I think so my generation, woman, had to choose. That's the problem, I think. Maybe the next generation, they don't need to choose. So they can have the both pillars at the same time. I mean, the pillars means family life and plus the working career. But so my generation, so now I'm the 50s, had to choose. That's the problem. How do you think?
I agree 100% with that. And in our own research, we reference this repeatedly in papers, the notion that to a greater degree than many other wealthy countries, other low fertility countries, women in particular in Japan have a choice. you can have a career or you can have a family. You can have both, but it's really, really, really hard.
Yes, yes.
And I think many people don't want to have, to try to have both. There's a big area of research on what people call work-life balance or work-family balance in Japan. And I think that there are a lot of explanations for this. But I would argue, you know, you said this is your generation. I would argue that this hasn't changed all that much. More women, of course, are working. Absolutely. Man working, woman staying home, family, that's almost gone now. But I would argue that two career couples are not so common even now in Japan. That's very hard.
Yeah. So in that context, I'd like to ask, so once I read the paper about the connection between the patriarchy and the declining birth rate, low fertility, particularly Japan, Korea, and Italy are suffering the declining birth rate, low fertility. So these are the patriarchy countries. How do you think about that?
So that's a very stimulating question. And I think I would I'm going to agree and disagree a little bit. I'm not so sure. I guess I don't necessarily know exactly what the definition of the patriarchy is, but my image of what I think the patriarchy is, I think that that's not so directly relevant today, but the residual effects of the patriarchy, particularly what some of my colleagues call the gender essentialist structure of Japanese society or Korean, Italian society, that really emphasizes the notion that men and women have different nature, different abilities, and different responsibilities. And the inflexibility around those views reinforces the sort of expectations about who compromises on the work when work-family balance becomes difficult. And that's why we don't see, that's why we still see women making this or that choice, work or family choice.
Yes. So as we discussed, so we had lost decades or 20 years or 30 years or 40 years or something in terms of the declining birth rate or low fertility. So what kind of lessons so we get from these experiences?
What kind of lessons?
Well, that's
a good question as well. I'm not sure I know what lessons we take. I mean, I'll say a couple of things. And this is particularly relevant in the context of the recent emphasis on really tackling from a policy perspective low fertility under Prime Minister Kishida and others. And if we look back, there have been policies implemented to support childbearing, support families for decades, the angel plans and all of this. And one thing we learn is that that hasn't had really any effect on raising the fertility rate. But at the same time, one thing that we might consider is what the fertility rate might have looked like in the absence of those policies. It might look, Japan might look like Korea now. So I think we take, we learn from this period that if we want to really raise fertility to a higher level, the kinds of policies that have been implemented so far are not going to work.
So as you said, the Kishida administration announced the countermeasures against the declining birth rate on different level, 異次元の少子化対策. So how do you think about this? Is it effective?
So I think as a demographer, I think you could bring in 50 demographers and have them sit here and answer that question, and we would all say no. I think that the kinds of initiatives that are incorporated in the Ijigen Shoushika Taisaku are things that have been tried in Japan and in many, many other countries. And there's a lot of research on these policies and their effects on fertility rates. And there is no country, no low fertility country where these kinds of policies, so for example, financial support for children, reducing educational fees, increasing childcare. There's no country, with the possible exception of France, where these have been demonstrated to be effective. So I think demographers would be quite skeptical of this. And if I can just say one more thing, I think the reason really goes back to the fact that these policies all target couples.
Yeah.
And couples are not the issue. Young people who are not marrying because they want, although they want to marry, they can't marry, that's the issue.
Mm.
And policies that target the circumstances of those people are the ones that are probably going to be effective at raising fertility, not policies that target couples who are already married.
So not only couples or families, but also the younger generation.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
So one other way to think about that, though, is that Kishida-san's policies, if young people who want to marry and maybe 10 years ago thought, okay, I can't do this, I'm not, it's too expensive. If they look at those policies and they see, it's becoming easier financially to raise children, let's get married. Then if that's the case, I do think these are effective. But I think that's kind of a bit of a stretch to imagine that that kind of information spillover will happen.
And also, I think particularly in Japan, the staying single is not uncomfortable. I mean, ohitori-sama, yeah, is really welcomed. So compared to US or other European countries, how do you think?
Yeah, 独身貴族.
Yes.
I agree.
We can have a dinner or so in one single person in the restaurant.
Yeah.
But in US, it really seems strange or... Yeah.
I agree with you on that, yeah. I spend so much time in both countries that it's a little bit hard for me to make a distinction. But a lot of my friends in Japan or colleagues talk about the U.S. as a couple culture.
Yes, yes.
And therefore incentivizing people to form couples.
Yes.
Maybe there's something to that. I'm not sure. But to your point about comfortable living as a single person here, I'm 100% in agreement. I think it would be hard for me to imagine. I don't know every country. I haven't lived in every country. It would be hard to imagine a place that's as comfortable to live as a single person than urban Japan, Tokyo, Osaka, Nagoya, the big cities. No problem whatsoever.
Is it bad things? Because if ohitori-sama staying single is uncomfortable, so people will marry.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I think choices are great. You mentioned, you know, the choices you've made, and I think the ability to make choices about your life are wonderful things. I think a little bit of a tangent, but policies that sort of try to encourage people to marry and have children for the sake of the country, those policies will never, never, ever work. Choice is wonderful. But I would also repeat something I just said a minute ago, which is that if people have a particular choice they want to make but feel they cannot make that choice, people want to marry and have children but feel they're not in a position to do that, then that's something that I think is not good and something that policy would ideally seek to address.
Okay, thank you so much. I want to talk more, but so time is limited.
Sorry,
so
I talk too much.
It's okay. So we move to another topic about asapoki.
Asapoki desu.
Yes, yes.
Okay, yeah.
Because Jim-san, you are a really good listener of asapoki. So how did you know asapoki first?
Yeah, so during the bubble, not bubble, I'm sorry, we're talking about the bubble so much here. Not during the bubble, the opposite, during corona, COVID.
Corona.
I realized that my regular schedule, so regularly before COVID and now, I come to Japan 3 times, maybe 4 times a year, and I couldn't do that. So I missed, you know, listening to the, you know, watching TV and hearing Japanese on a regular basis. So I thought, okay, podcasts are a good idea. And I'd listen to a whole bunch of different Japanese news podcasts, and I realized the one that I really loved was Asapoki.
Oh.
So I've been listening very regularly.
Thank you so much. So what's your favorite program?
So I have several that I like. I really like Kanda-san's Zatsudankai. Mm. I like Oyamoya.
Mm.
And I like they don't do it anymore, but the Arasa.
Mm.
One I like,
yes.
But by far, my favorite is Ishoni Shinbun o Mekuro.
Ah, really?
I love that show. I listen to it religiously.
Yeah, thank you so much. So please stay the good listener.
Of course. Please continue making these shows.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. So today's guest is Professor Jim Ramo of Princeton University. Thank you, Jim-san.
Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So, I myself is a single and no children. I feel sometimes really I feel myself guilty. So, and there are lots of working women like me. So that's the problem, I think. But as I said, I had to choose. That's the serious problem.
Yes.
That's the important problem.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, if you have all of the options available to you and you choose that, wonderful. That's a choice that you can and should be able to make. But if you want both the career you've had and a family and you feel you can't choose that, that's not good. And I think that's why fertility is so low in Japan, Korea, Taiwan, Italy. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Jim-san. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a real pleasure to be here.
So today's guest was Jim-san of Princeton University. Thank you so much. So bye-bye.
Bye-bye.